Well, you know, for the first time, I was kind of looking forward to coming on the air and complaining about something. And doggone, about 5 minutes ago, Angelo sent me the files. You know, I got great bumper music on this show. I hope you enjoy it. But I was going to change it up a little bit. I'll get it to you. He was out there in the hall when I walked in the studio. He goes, I'm going to get it to you before you go on there so you don't have anything to complain about. So thanks, Angelo. I do have good music. I hope you like my music. You like my music, Dave? Good music? Okay. Spent a lot of time working on this music. You know, it's not like I don't have anything better to do. Welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz. You're listening to 94.5 WGTK, The Answer in Greenville, South Carolina. Today was National Trails Day. I know we had some events going on at state parks across South Carolina and some of the places the Palmetto Conservation Foundation is working. Looks like the storm's moving in, so be careful. If you're out there on the water especially, those things can move in a real hurry and catch you off guard. I have to say, it's my birthday Thursday, and I'm not looking for happy birthday wishes. I got a ton of those, and I appreciate them all. But my family is great. Let me tell you what. Fishing was not great for me in the morning. It was a five-hour I can't believe I'm going to say this word. It was a grind Thursday morning. And I came up with, like, two bass that wouldn't even have measured in a tournament. And I fished hard, too. But, you know, it's like somebody said, you could have been inside. And that's the truth. But anyway, family had this big birthday thing. It was more like a five-ring circus. We had grits going one place. We had all the fixing for shrimp and grits going the other. You know, the bacon, the sausage, the onions, the mushrooms, had all that going. And somebody else was taking care of that. We had fish frying. We had shrimp grilling. We had hush puppies being made. It just didn't have any appearance of organization or coming together, and it came together, and oh man, I did not start off my 50th year very well. You know, can't button your pants on top button and all, but it was really good. I, my family, if you're listening to you, y'all are the best. I love all of you. And we have a good time together, don't we? But, anyway, like I said, hope you're out there. This is the start of National Fishing and Boating Week, June 4th through the 12th. It's nationwide here in South Carolina. Our free day was a week ago, but we have another one coming up July the 4th where you can fish for free in the fresh water. You don't have to have a license. It's an effort to get you out there and involved. In fact, National Fishing Boating Week has a few, like 4 points. Connect with your family. Family fishing is a great way for family members of all ages to connect and have fun. You know, I've been going up Lake Robinson, skipping stuff under the warden's boat dock there, practicing and all. And I'm amazed how many kids and families are up there just fishing off the docks, catching a little 3-4 inch brim and just having a ball. You don't have to go out and catch, you know, five bass that weigh 34 pounds. You know, you just go fishing. If you're not catching, you're out in nature. There's plenty of things to watch, plenty of things to learn. So I love that first one. Connect with nature. 90% of Americans live within an hour of a navigable waterway. Fishing and boating are great opportunities to connect more with nature. That navigable waterway thing comes into play when you duck hunt. You don't have to worry about that when you're fishing. But look how many lakes and rivers are right here in South Carolina. I mean, you can't get in a car and not cross a bridge or pass a lake within, 10-15 minutes? De-stress. Boating is ranked as one of the top three of all stress-relieving activities. It depends on whether it's a Saturday or not. Just remember, you're all out there to have fun and be nice to each other. Help conserve. This is one that I stress a lot every year. The funds from your fishing licenses and boat registrations go towards the conservation of our natural aquatic areas, and that's Pittman Robertson. Boating is Dingle Johnson, of which South Carolina got almost $15 million this year. So, yeah, it's a good thing to go outside fishing, boating. Just be careful. Be very careful. How to celebrate National Fishing and Boating Week? Find places to boat and fish near you. You can go to, I just had this. It's, there's a website out there. Takemefishing.org. That's it. They have a map that that has every place you can fish. In fact, Powderhook, powderhook.com. We've had Eric Dinger on this show before. His app has, and I've looked at it, South Carolina. It's got every place that's open to the public where you can fish. It lists what you can do in those areas. And it's a great thing to use. Learn to fish, you know, instructional videos, road tips. You know, South Carolina has the fishing rodeos and also has the, man, my mind is just not with it today. It's age. It's all of a sudden hit me. The fish free fishing clinics that you can put on and be involved in to learn how to fish. Share your catch. Hashtag first catch photos. First of the day, first of the season, or first of a lifetime. Share them. Attend an event. That's the clinics, the fishing derbies, rodeos we have here in South Carolina. And this is one that was on the list that I asked you to do in January, kind of a New Year's resolution for the outdoorsman. That's mentor, teach someone new to fish. Yeah, could be a kid, relative, friend, someone in your neighborhood. It's a lot of people don't have access and don't know where to start. And all they need is a helping hand, and that could be you. And think of, you know, if you fished and boated and all your life, think of how many memories you've got. Wouldn't you want to share those with somebody else? Let them make their own memories. And share whatever you got, boating and fishing, on social media. So, National Fishing and Boating Week this week. Get out there. Take someone new, make some memories. Hey, and don't forget that camera either. Coastal Expeditions is having a pretty neat event down on the coast in the Santee Delta. They're going to take a tour out to Cedar Island. It's kind of a birding tour, right? Ecosystem, you know, tidal marshland tour. Sunday, June 19th, 9 a.m. to 1:30 and 11 a.m. to 1:30. It's a kayak. No, this is actually a boat trip. This is not a kayak trip. Yep, that's right. They take you in a boat out the island. You can hang out in the island for a little bit, and then they go back up the river. Coastal Expeditions is in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. You can go to their website and get more information. Summer camps. This is kind of a cool one. Surf and kayak camps, age 7 to 17. All levels welcome. Shaka Surf School and Coastal Expeditions are teaming up to offer a unique week full of adventure, from sliding in the surf on the front beach to gliding through the salt marsh on a kayak. Your kids are in for a summer they will not soon forget. Now, and these are taking place all summer, June 6th through the 10th, 13th through the 17th, all the way through August the 19th. These are day camps. Drop them off and pick them up. If you're going to be down in Charleston on vacation, it'll be fun. Very fun little thing. I guess this is the week for paddle and water sports. Tara Hall, Georgetown, South Carolina, is having a paddle fest. It's the fifth annual Tara Hall Paddle Fest. It's going to be June 25th. Ages 17 and older, $40. 16, 25, under 7, free. $10 if you need to rent a kayak. Just going to have a good time. They're going to have barrel races, kayak races. Be a fun time if you've got a kayak. I know there are a lot of people out there. That is a very inexpensive way to get involved in fishing and boating, as a kayak. You can put it in the back of most any car, strap it on top of any roof. It's good exercise. It just beware of the boaters. You know, there are a lot of us out there that have a dim view of kayakers sometimes. It's just from experience, and not everybody's the same. But just be conscious of where you are, what you're doing, and make sure you're visible. And don't load your kayak and all on the boat ramp. That's the worst thing you do. And I went through, this is not a community calendar event, but I went through there in June across the state of South Carolina. Today and tomorrow, well, this is not to say, the Western North Carolina Air Museum is having an airfare today and tomorrow up in Hendersonville. But the rest of these in South Carolina, Party in the Pines in Whitmire, the Mighty Moo Festival in Calpins, Ag and Art, which is artisans, that's statewide, that's farm visits, Ridge Peach Festival in Trenton, South Carolina, Shrimp and Grits Festival in Columbia, Hampton County Watermelon Festival. I mean, this is a few of the things off the internet you can find to go do. Not necessarily hunting, fishing, just get out there. Good song. Hang on through the break. Be back on the other side with a few things I want to talk to. Before Geddes, Brandon joins us after the bottom of the hour.
Cause I ain't in no hurry today.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. That would be the Genesis or Phil Collins. Oh, I think it's Phil Collins, isn't it? One of his solo albums. How not to be that guy when invited on a friend's boat. This is Vicki Frazier writes a blog, and she wrote this, and it had, there were 66 pages when I printed this off. The front three are the article, and the other 63 pages were comments from people about people they've had on their boats. And in this summer, you may be lucky enough to be invited on someone's boat. I hope you are. When you are invited, just a few guidelines or suggestions. And it's pretty good, especially if you want to go back. If you want to be invited, you want to be a repeat guest on someone else's boat, then here's some things you need to do. Number one, food. Don't be the guy that brings one bag of pretzel rods for a full day of boating. Eventually, you will get hungry. And when you do, you'll have to depend on the kindness of others to be fed properly, mainly because they don't want you want you passing out due to lack of proper nutrition or falling off the boat. And these are good. Consider bringing a sub sandwich, something that's cold to begin with. You can keep it on ice. Chopped fruit, vegetables, chips, something easy to transport. Be gracious when someone offers you some of their food. Don't just take it for granted. The hostess is supposed to feed you unless that was specifically implied. And normally when a group of people gets together on a boat, there is no shortage of food. But don't show up with just something that you like. If you're invited, you know, ask your host, what do you like to eat on the boat? What do you like to drink? And show it with something that they like. That'll go further to get you invited back than just showing up with a lot of food. Drinks. Always bring twice what you can drink. Boating is a communal affair, and you may have to share because there's always a person who came completely empty-handed or underestimated their ability to consume beverages on a hot day. Remember about alcohol and heat. You know, it's quite a mixture. You know, water, Gatorade, much better choice. But if you're going to drink, just be aware that alcohol and heat, especially in the summertime, has some adverse effects. Also, don't just show up with just drinks. Put them in a cooler and cover them with ice. Unless your host says there's a cooler on the boat, you just add it to ours. And drink a water. Proper hydration will ensure that you don't get too intoxicated and be that guy. Guests. Did you tell the captain you were bringing a friend, dog, child on their boat? Bringing tag-alongs without notice is a big no-no. Maybe that extra will overcrowd the boat or have an accident on the carpet, that being the dog, not the friend. In some situations, just aren't kid-friendly. Besides, now you're personally responsible for the care and feeding of your guests. You're going to have to share your warm six-pack and pretzel rods between two people now. That's a great article. Always check with your hostess before bringing along a sidekick. Yes, even you, beloved friend. Smoking. Always ask before lighting up on someone's boat. Now, if you're on a gasoline boat, you know, it's probably not a wise idea to smoke a whole lot, especially not flick your ash around the rear of the boat. That's where the motor is. Once again, these are expensive machines. Just because they're open air doesn't mean it's okay. Owners always fear that some drunk may put a burn hole in the seat. Be considerate and ask first and never throw your butts in the water. Littering, speaking of throwing things in the water, absolutely nothing goes in the water that's not seaweed. Orange rinds, peanut shells, and such thing are no big deal, but be mindful of your beer caps, cigarette butts, wrappers, and cans. Litter is destructive and disgusting. In fact, if you find a piece of trash in the water, pick it up and put it in the trash bin. Don't be a piggy. Be prepared. Be sure you brought all you need for fun in the sun. This includes sunscreen, sunglasses, chapstick, and a towel along with your food and drinks. Trust your friends when they say you'll need sunscreen or a water. You know, you look like a... Yeah. What is it, number six ball on the pool table, the red one? The captain. Okay, here's the deal. The captain is in charge of the boat. The captain may not always be the one in the driver's seat. If she says it's time to go, it's time to go. If they ask you to move, sit down, shut up, do it. As fun and relaxing as boating is, the captain's job to ensure that the safety of all the people on the boat, and they are liable for you. Remember that when you are a boat owner. Also, the captain chooses the music. I love it. That's me. There are only one real rule on my boat. And that was don't sit on my rod. My flats boat has on the each side on the gunnel has rod storage. And mine actually, they fold up. So you don't have to go underneath the gunnel. You just fold it up and pick out from the top. And the only rule in my boat was you don't sit on those. I don't think I ever had to throw anybody off, but you had to remind people every once in a while. But yeah, the captain is the boss on a boat. Safety. If you feel a hold my beer and watch this moment coming up, just say no. Do not push anyone out of a moving boat or jump out of a moving boat. Do not hang out by the motor of a running boat. Yeah. Don't try a double backflip off on the platform. Don't sit on the rails at high speeds. In other words, don't be dumb. Kids, we used to jump off the boat all the time. Why did my aunt let me do that? We weren't going that fast, and she knew we were doing it. I guess, anyway, just my doctor friend in Charleston says he has more fun in the summertime with the stories of hold my beer and watch this than anything else. Passenger etiquette, respect the boat. Don't step on seats, and boy, I tell you, go bass fishing with a guy who has a $75,000 bass boat, and that's one of the first things he'll tell you. Don't step on the seats. There's a step between the seats. Use the step. Don't use seats. Step on hard surfaces only if possible. Leave coolers on the floor. Don't bring any glass on board. Respect equipment. Don't play with any buttons or switches. Don't try to start the boat. Don't try to help unless the captain asks you to. Or you can ask to help, and if he says okay or no, just let it go. A friend also mentioned that you should use spray sunscreen before getting on the boat. Sunscreen spray makes seats sticky and hard to clean. The lotion kind is better for your skin and the environment anyway. Don't be late. This is across the board with fishing guides and all. This is a crucial one. Nothing is more tiresome than sitting with a boat full of people waiting on that one person who didn't plan ahead. We could be out having fun, but no, we're still stuck at the dock because you just texted on my way from inside the beer store. Have some respect for your friends and get there where you're supposed to be. Disembarking. Don't stand up until the boat's fully secure. Make sure you grab everything you brought with you on the boat. Make sure all the trash has been cleared and put in a proper place at the house. Ask for help if you need it, and ask the captain if they need help wiping down the boat. Some of these buddy trips we used to take off to the Gulf Stream, and you hear horror stories. They get back to the dock, and there's always one guy that jumps off, grabs his fish, and leaves. You know, so what a lot of guys have started doing is they'll stop 30 miles offshore, and we're cleaning the boat right here, and everybody's helping. And it's amazing how quick it goes. So anyway, just some National Boating Week, if you get invited to go out, just some tidbits for you to think about, and pretty good ones at that, and for a pretty good article. Going to totally flip things from boating over to hunting, and I think this is it's an issue we all have to address with ourselves in hunting. More and more, it's becoming a whatever wildlife department's responsibility to address, but it's technology in hunting. This is May 20th, Joe Albert. This is off the Field and Stream website. Colorado to adopt policy regulating drones, tech, and hunting. As evolving technology such as drones become increasingly accessible to sportsmen, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission has come within the final stages of adopting a new formal policy pertaining to fair chase. You can look up fair chase if you want. It's just what it says it is. And it's not a fenced enclosure. It's you against the animal, and it's fair as much as, well, sometimes it's really unfair because animals are really smart and have a good sense of smell and eyesight. And when you, I'm sure a lot more deer see me than I see deer. Once complete, the fair chase policy will serve as a benchmark by which CPW will determine whether a technology or practice fits within the ideals of fair chase. If adopted, this would be among the first, if not the first state specific, overarching fair chase policy of its kind. It's about the desire of CPW staff and commissioners to have a policy that supports the regulations. As things evolve, our regulations will be what define fair chase, but the policy is in support of that. It's Matt Robbins, Public Information Officer. Here they go. There's only three of them. But think about these three because they're, you know, drones, great things. I mean, boy, you look at some of those, there's a video up on the Woods and Water Facebook page now of a drone taking pictures of one of the waterfalls up in the mountains. And it's incredible. And trust me, you know, I got a little indoor helicopter for my birthday. I crash it every time I lift it off. but, you know, drones, And he got to have the guy in Kentucky who shot the drone down because it was snooping and his daughter sitting beside the pool. And so for every good use to something, there's always somebody that just doesn't know when to stop. So here are three. There's only three of them, and these are will be the underlying principles they make decisions on. One, a technology or practice that allows a hunter or angler to locate or take wildlife without acquiring necessary hunting and angling skills or competency. Wow. That's all sorts of interpretations right there. And where do you start? You know, trail cameras, which is in the second one too. The second one, a technology or practice that allows a hunter or angler to pursue or take wildlife without being physically present and pursuing wildlife in the field. Now, could that be pursuing? Could that be a trail camera setup? Now, I don't have any trail cameras. That's why I'm probably a poorer than average hunter, but I don't like them. It's like making an appointment. I want to go out there and be surprised. If I see one, I'm surprised. But you know, I play the wind game, play the time of day, the moon phases, get out there and scout a little bit, not as much as I should. It's always on my list of things to do better next year. You know, beat that animal in his own game without relying on technology to do it. Three, a technology or practice that makes harvesting wildlife almost certain when the technology or practice prevents wildlife from eluding take. Now, I don't know. I don't know how that one works out, but, it's something for us to think about. I mean, hunting, there's a great Michael Waddell, you know, one of the original Realtree guys and all, has a video out there where he discusses where the hunting industry has gone. And it's a good video. You need to go watch it. If you're a hunter, fisherman, or somebody, you need to go. He addresses a little bit. And in his thing, he says, look, it's a renewable resource. It's available to anybody and everybody. But yeah, this would be interesting. You know, the western states are kind of on the leading edge of this, Alaska, some of the western states, because of the big game, you know, the elk, the bear, sheep, stuff like that. But it's gotta filter down through all of us. At some point, it's going to. So anyway, I saw that and I talked to my brother and he said, boy, I don't like subjective rules open to interpretation by whoever's enforcing them. I don't think this is quite that, but it does bring up some interesting questions. You know, trail cameras is the big one. I think drones is another one. I forget who I was talking to said they were coming out of the hunt club and there was a drone following them. Now, whether that's somebody who's, you know, trying to make trouble for them or what, you just don't know. Oh well, but hunting is what you make it. You know, fair chase is paramount in it, or else we've reduced it to not what it should be. Hang on through the break. Gettys Brennan from the University of South Carolina Angler is going to be on with us. Catch up with him. See you on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. March the 28th, 2014, exactly, 6 days after this show debuted, I was in Columbia, Palmetto Sportsman's Classic, and I ran into this guy, and he just started talking, and we have been best friends ever since. How are you, Gettys?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me on. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, I can hear you just fine. Just fine. Okay, look, I just did a story earlier in the last segment about, you know, being invited guest on a boat and all that. So I'm the captain of the show. There's only one thing you cannot do today.
What's that?
You cannot say the G word.
I can't say, what can I not say? Gamecock?
No. Grind.
Oh, hi. Ron Wong over there at Larry Ria Outdoors Riders, he would love that. Bill Paul, our good friend over at Visit Anderson, you know we always have a good time with y'all.
Huh.
And build great relationships in this fishing community. It's just awesome to have guys like y'all, man. Y'all really are what keeps the fishing community going. Without media coverage, we couldn't do the things that we do.
That's right. At least you could do them, but nobody would know about them. How's that?
Exactly right. It's kind of like that commercial where the tree falls in the woods. Who hears it?
That's right.
It falls in the woods.
That's right. But yeah, the grind, you know, I think I heard it for the first time at the classic. I mean, the cup down on Murray, you know, it's a grind. It's hot. It's a grind. And it got to be a joke amongst us. And, you know, I'm getting that on my birthday wishes. It's a grind.
Well, it's because you had so much food to eat. That's all.
Oh, no, it's not either. It's just because that's what y'all like to needle me with. But anyway, man, you're busy. It's been a while since we've been on the show. You've been fishing. You've had school. You're working a gig at Bassmaster, helping them cover some of these tournaments and all. What? You just got a lot going on.
A good bit. You know, I was blessed with the opportunity to go work with Bassmaster.com, starting at the Grand Lake Geico Bassmaster Classic the second week of March, and just been working with them since, doing a lot of GoPro stuff, doing on-the-water blogging now. I am missing this week at Texoma because I am working for a Senate campaign up in upstate South Carolina.
Yep.
And, you know, just been traveling all over the place. That's the one thing, you know, I thought was just fishing in college that was a lot of traveling. But at these tournaments, on top of that, between the weekends that you're not fishing college tournaments,
right,
it has been, it's been quite the ride, but definitely can't complain, and I've been blessed with opportunities to be able to work with the best in the business.
College fishing, USC, you know, you had one team qualify.
Back to back.
Do what?
Back to back.
Back to back, yes. I was there. I didn't get to get out on the lake because I was actually fishing my own tournament. Finally, after how many years, I finally get to fish. But I was there for the week. Huh?
Well, you know, I said, I love that you got out there and got to fish the tournament.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, did it. You did as a co-angler. Who did you draw?
Drew Braxton Setzer.
Okay, he was a rookie this year, correct?
Yeah, he's a rookie. I can't remember the other guy's name. He was out of...
He must not have been very nice to you then.
Oh, he was great. both of them were really, really nice. I just... I was Carolina rigging the second day, and that's just like slow death to me. But you
sometimes
know,
sometimes out of the back of the boat, you have to do things that otherwise you wouldn't.
That's right. But I was there for the weigh-in. So we got back-to-back FLW collegiate championships down at the University of South Carolina. Y'all have now qualified, what, three teams for next year's FLW championship?
At least, yes, sir, three so far. And, we expect to qualify a few more. And I want to back up a little bit wherever you said, you know, we met at the Palmetto Sports Classic the week after you started this deal. One cool thing is too, is that week that we met, I'm pretty sure we were ranked close to the last in the nation. And we were having some times, you know, going out and getting sponsors, and we really worked hard. And that's kind of what brought me to the whole advertising and marketing is I realized going out and getting sponsors and building a substructure for our team financially, like a business, was really going to be cool. And it's really cool to look back on that and now see you out there with us, whether it's pouring down rain on Lake Murray on the final day of the national championship. And here we are. We've gone from last in the nation to first in the nation. And it's really, really, really humbling to see the hard work come to fruition for sure.
Yeah. And you actually got guys that are coming there to fish. I mean, that's
I know. And, you know, we're not even offering any scholarships.
Yeah.
But we got guys that are calling me, and they'll be like, man, can't decide if I want to go to Clemson or Carolina, but I want to fish. And I said, well, you know, what are you pursuing? And, you know, if they go with business or any sort of communications or anything like that, I always say, well, Carolina's the place for you. If they say engineering, you know, I said, well, you might want to check out Clemson. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the cool thing about college fishing is we're just one big family. So.
Right.
A lot of us travel with the Clemson guys and so on and so forth with them, with us as well.
Well, you and Jacob Romer are pretty good friends. He's a Clemson guy.
Oh, yeah. Me and Jacob have a good old time. We're both from Gaffney. And, you know, you went out there with us. It was sure enough a grind. I think that might be the most overused word.
Okay.
Fasting, but.
Dump him, Dave. He said the word.
Have y'all cut me off yet?
No. I couldn't do that to you. I threatened to, but I'm not going to do it.
Yes, sir.
So we don't know. You've gone from that to now three teams. We don't know where it's going to be yet, though, right?
I tell you what FLW told us.
What's that?
They think it's funny. I don't know why they think it's so funny. Kevin Hunt, the college director, and Bill Taylor both said, now, Gannis, we're not having it in South Carolina this year. So, well, I guess you learn. You keep bringing them back to South Carolina, we're going to keep winning them.
Well, it's time for us to go somewhere else and win it then.
That's right. I mean, you look all the way back at the Forestwood Cup with Anthony. He won it when it was on Lake Murray, and then Bass Springs, Lake Harville, and your our good friend Casey goes out there and wins that one. So, you know, there's definitely, you know, there for a long time, there had never been a home state angler to win a Bassmaster Classic.
Yes.
And then, you know, the last 2 years, this past year with Edwin Evers, and that was really neat to watch. But you know, it's getting like a kind of like a home field advantage out there,
which usually is not or has been in the past not a good thing. It's always been kind of the anchor around every home state guy's chain, you know, his neck or whatever.
It's you have so much more pressure on you. There's a lot more boats following you, and I know that you and I are going to get into that a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a lot to handle whenever it's the home state team. I mean, this year, if you got on Lake Murray the same week that we finished last year, there'd be probably 10 or 15 boats, scattered out on different spots that we fish. So, you know, I mean, it's cool after the tournament for people to go out there and see what we did and learn how to do it themselves. But, you know, definitely we've been trying to start a culture that kind of shies away from that year in the tournament.
Well, one more thing on college bass fishing. You know, it's not a sanctioned, you have a club which is not affiliated with the university other than using the name. You're not supported. You pretty much, like you said, you went out and raised all your support. Greenfish Tackle, I know, supports you. Lose some of the other outdoor industries. Where do you think it's going? I mean, you're not offering scholarships yet. Do you guys really want the regulations and the, I guess, the direction, somebody telling you what to do and all that? Do you really want that in college bass fishing, or do you think it's inevitable?
Personally, I don't, but it is inevitable. It's going to happen. And the reason I say that is because you look at the rate of high school teams that are growing, and it's ridiculous. And then you look at there's even middle school teams now. I mean, the sport of fishing is growing tremendously, and there was a big generation gap there for a while with participation. And now what's happening is just like in any other sport, you know, kids go and play middle school football, then they play high school football, and now all of a sudden they're in college. So I think in the next few years you're going to see some changes there just because of the money that's being exchanged hands with amateur athletes.
Okay.
You know, I think that something's going to have to happen. Am I glad that it's going to be after I graduate? Yes, completely, because I feel like it's going to be a terrible headache for anything to do with sponsorships. And, you know, at the same time, that's one of the beautiful things about college bass fishing is the fact that you learn so much about business and the fact that you learn so much about advertising. There's no way in the world that I would have the opportunity to work for the largest and the oldest tournament organization in the nation with the Bass Angler Sportsman Society. So, college fishing's opened up a lot of jobs for a lot of my friends. There's a guy over at Clemson now, Patrick Wilford. He's graduating. He just fished his last college tournament on Lake Gunnersville. He's coming down here to Columbia to work at Pure Fishing.
Yep,
I think that's another thing for the listeners to keep in mind is Pure Fishing is the largest corporation in the sport of bass fishing, and they're located right here in the state of South Carolina.
Yeah. You know, I read that article about him going, and it does. Even if you don't go on and fish to the next level, there's so many opportunities for you guys because you've been around it. You know the people in it. They know you, and it's just an easy transition. We're just going to move you from college over to working in the industry. There's breaks coming up. Hang on through the break. We're gonna get some of the other things, you know, I talked about this morning, the Mike Iaconelli article and all, but hang on through the break. We'll be back on the other side of more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Back in the road, see the fire. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We're talking to Geddes Brannon, a good friend of this show, all-around good guy, terribly busy sometimes. We can't get the time on the air that we'd like to, but he's here with us today. Geddes, you're working over at Bass a little bit. You've seen it. You're out on the water blogging now, so you see it. I guess with the first time it really came to mind was back at the Cup on Murray. You know, Anthony Gagliardi pulled up Sunday afternoon, the place he was catching his school in Bass, and he had the local guy in there who really gave him a hard time for even being in there.
Exactly. And, you know, the sad part is that's one thing that's going to happen in competitive fishing. And competitive fishing will always be handicapped because of the simple fact that the water is our stadium. And let's use something like the NFL as an example, or any other traditional bat and ball sport. You know, can a high school kid suited up in a football uniform or a Crazy fan run out there in front of Cam Newton? You know, and it's just, no, not at all. So my thing is that's always going to hold back the sport.
Okay.
The fact that anybody can get in the way. And, you know, there's different opinions on this, and my opinion is that there's 12 tournaments, let's say they're elite tournaments, there's 12 of them during the calendar year, and they bring a couple hundred thousand dollars to each host community. That is to each host community, sometimes more than that.
All right.
That lake is your home lake and is yours 360 days of the year. Can somebody not respect you for those 5 days that a big organization like Bass or FLW brings an economic stimulant to your community? I mean, it's just
evidently
it's like
not.
You have all this time to fish. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about, you know, the guys that worked all week and the only day they have to fish is Saturday.
Right.
You know, it's not about those type of guys. It's not about the guys that are taking their grandchildren out or their families out. You know, it's about the people that are, like, for example, at Toledo Bend, Kevin Van Dam's out. He probably had 100 boats following him.
Oh, yeah.
Never in my life have I seen anything like that. That was ridiculous. We were in the middle of the Armada. It felt like we went on a local tournament shotgun blast off every time he'd move spots. And he was hitting very, very small pieces of structure that might be the size of like a chair. And, you know, to watch him control the crowd the way he did was quite remarkable, because what was happening was he would sit there and he would conduct them because he knew how to do it. He knows how to do it. But some of these guys don't know how to do that yet, and they get in their way. And you know, it is public water, but like I said, let it be yours for the rest of the days you have out there. And you know, my main thing is, you know, after Van Dam was leaving those spots, people would pull up behind him and pull and 7 or 8 pound bass out and post it on social media and be bragging like they did that. You know, there's a saying in fishing that anybody can catch fish, but the good fishermen are the ones that find them. And I know Mike Iaconelli hit in his article that, you know, if you can't find your own fish, then why even be out there? And that's a big thing with it.
You know, he's had, this obviously built up with him from, Toledo Bend. Guy fished my spots just after he left them. It was the same guy. It happened more than once. He said the other was at the TTBC, which I was at a couple of weeks ago. You know, cut him off and started fishing down the bank. Ike was fishing and said, he said he wasn't fishing just lolly. He was really fishing. Now I know that weekend there was at least one fishing tournament going on. There was a crappy tournament going on. I mean, it wasn't like that was the only tournament on the lake. So I guess there may have been a little bit of leeway given to that guy. But, you know, you talk about...
So there's still common courtesy.
Well, there is. But it also goes both ways. You know, there's a companion article I ran across... I can't remember that somebody else wrote that says, wait a minute, it was another Bassmaster blog. In response to this, it was like, you know, it cuts both ways. You know, some people say, you know, I've been on a lake fishing and had elites come down on me and mark my spots while I was fishing them. So, you know, kind of, I don't know. It's a tough issue.
In this sport, you're always going to have waypoint gatherers. We call them waypoint pirates. When we're out on Lake Gunnersville or Pickwick Lake, somewhere where you're having to do a lot of scanning, somebody finally sees you drop down and troll for a second. And you hear, it's kind of idiotic or ignorant on their part because they don't turn the volume down on their Lowrance or Hummingbird or whatever their sonar of choice is. And when they waypoint it, you hear them as they drive by, and you're like, how stupid can you be? And a lot of times, you're not even going to go fish that spot. It's ridiculous. At Lake Gunnersville, for instance, we had a tournament out there last weekend. We would pull up during practice, and we would find a school of fish. We would make one or two casts, maybe catch a three-pounder, four-pounder, and say, okay, this place has potential. We would mark it, and we would leave, just for the sole fact that you can't sit there and fish. You can't see what you're really on because there's so many people out there watching.
I was talking to Brandon Cobb. You know, they're up on Kentucky Lake this week. And
same exact thing's going to happen there.
Well, and he said, I was asking him because, you know, he was telling me about ledge fishing and all that. And I asked him, and he said, I won't make a cast in 3 days of practice. He said, all I'll do is just idle along, run the spot, mark points. He said, because as soon as you stop and make a cast, if somebody's watching, they'll say, okay, we need to go fish that right there. He said, a lot of guys can tell how big the fish are from the sonar. He said, I'm not that good yet. He said, I just know there's fish down there. I'll mark it and move on. He said, because you don't, somebody will come in there and fish right behind you.
Oh yeah. And I've had it, you know, we have it happen during college tournaments. It happens in local tournaments. But a place like Toledo Bend, it was the first day before we blasted off. I was with Greg Hackney, Cliff Pace, and Jacob Porosnik. We won back there in 2014, I believe. I could be wrong on that. And I was talking to them as I was putting cameras on their boats, and they said, the biggest issue for them was going to be local pressure. And they were debating whether it was a good thing that Bassmaster comes out with this 100 best lakes every year, because Toledo Bend right now is at the top of the list.
Right, yeah.
So everyone out there is wanting their own Toledo Bend bass, which is okay, which is great. But going behind someone at the caliber of Kevin Van Dam, who I might compare in our sport to someone to the ranks of Tiger Woods or Michael Jordan, which might sound crazy to some viewers that are not as involved in bass fishing as we are. This guy's won 21 tournaments, more than anybody. He is the legend in the sport, and he finally won one again. And I believe that the reason he had such a drought was because of spectators. It was because people are so, like, he created the monster itself.
He did.
I mean, he's great, and he does a lot of appearances. But, you know, when you have that many people following you around on a public body of water, like I said earlier, I mean, you can't just go to a Panthers game. Just go jump on the field, see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. And it was the same way in Texas. He had we did a lot of idling out there because of all the stumps and trees and all. We didn't, you know, normal lake, you'd just been running wide open. You'd, you know, see somebody in passing. But we were going up one creek. I think it was Wolf Creek, I think is what the guy told me it was. Idling up there, and there were like 8 or 9 boats. And out there, you know, there's so much brush in the water because of the drought and grew up and all that. And there's 8 or 9 boats, and nobody was fishing. And I was like, there's got to be somebody over there. And as you got where you could kind of see back and more, he was back in there. But, I mean, he probably had, time I started counting, he probably had 15 or 20 boats. And they were really close. I mean, back when I first started going to a tournament and running around and watching people and all that, it was, you know, we stayed well back. I mean, if you didn't have a really good telephoto lens, you could see a fish come over, you couldn't tell anything about it. It seems like, I think more and more you get closer.
Well,
and I've seen it both ways. You know, Britt Myers, when he won back on Winya Bay, you know, we pulled up there, we were there waiting on him Sunday morning, and we were following him out into one of those rice fields, and he stopped, and he turned around, and he said, look, guys, he says, I'm going to ask you to stay right here. He said, I'm going to go fish the far dock over there and down the bank and come back. He said, I'll come back to you. He said, but I want these fish in here to rest while I'm gone. And there were six or seven boats there. Everybody stayed back. But I've noticed that, especially on some of these more accessible lakes and all in these tournaments, you know, the media boats, we got a hard time getting through because everybody else. And it's just the sport pulling people in, which is a good thing. But you know, you get the argument from the weekend guy. Look, Saturday's the only day I can go fishing. Does that mean I can't go to my favorite spot, or, you know, the weather's been...
And there's, you know, there's some spots on certain lakes that are community holes. There's one that everybody knows about.
Yep.
But they're community holes for a reason. But some general rules that I can kind of, or not rules, but unwritten rules that I will tell, you know, the listeners, if you're ever out following a bass fishing tournament and you pull up on someone and they're fishing for $150,000, I mean, you know, or even $500,000 in Anthony's case.
Yeah.
You know, the safe way to follow them or the safe way to spectate is if you can tell that they're fishing a hard bank and they're going down the hard bank, there's no problem, especially the media boat, getting behind them when they've already fished that bank, unless they tell you that they're coming back.
Like Clark.
Now, if they're fishing, exactly. Now, yeah. If they're fishing, no. See, that was a soft edge.
Okay.
When you pulled up on Clark, now that was a soft edge. And what I mean by hard edge and soft edge is hard edge is just straight the bank. The fish have nowhere else to go. Soft edge might be
stick ups like
acres were fishing. And acres of grass.
Right.
Yes, exactly. So sometimes, you know, there, that's different. So you want to be cautious, you know, if you're fishing around points or deep spots, you want to be, or following them around there, should I say, you know, you got to be cautious with it. But even when there was one case last week or 2 weeks ago at Toledo Bend, and I'm not going to name the angler, but he was almost 100% positive that his marshal was on his spot the second day that he had the first day.
That's not good.
No. So
I have had media drivers tell me, you know, that I got rods in the locker if you want to fish. I'm like,
and you're like,
no.
No.
Not going to do that.
And two, you got guys that will be driving your camera boat, and they'll start waypointing stuff. And, you know, one of the ones that gets, he's really particular when people are following him is Ish Monroe.
Yeah.
And when he fishes really shallow, it's no secret. And I followed him a couple of days at Toledo Bend, and I was basically back there conducting traffic. I mean, making sure nobody was up there too close because, you know, he wants the sonars turned off.
Right.
He doesn't want anything, you know, the trolling motors turned down low. I mean, he's fishing in 2 feet of water.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know the time's running out. I hope everybody learned a little bit about,
we're not saying these guys,
what not to
do. Don't go follow these guys. Just be respectful because they love having people out there. Every once in a while, when it's bad, they want somebody to talk to. Hey, thanks, buddy.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of them to do. Thanks for having me on, Roger. As always, we'll get back together here in the next few weeks. Thank y'all.
Good enough, Kevin. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Yeah, don't hesitate to go out there. Just be respectful. If you were fishing for $150,000, what would you want anybody else do to you? So make time to get out there. Fishing Boating Week. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget that camera. I'll see you here again next Saturday. Same time.